You know, it makes me think of a little colored boy who was being called names by a white boy. And the colored boy wasn't so adept at the art. And so after he heard all the white boy had to say, he said to the other boy, "Oh, them things. You call me U.S." And that's what I'd like to say about every one of you. All the beautiful things you have said today, so much more than I have ever deserved. It's because you have those things right in your own hearts. You have done the same kind of work. You have battled the same social forces that needed to be fought. You have had the same heart and the same courage. Some of you have written those things and had them read, like Bob Cramer in his editorial column in the Labor Review. And you know just what the fight is. Jim Carlson just said that I've been an inspiration to a young man, to a young boy. And if there's anything more precious than that, I don't know. After all, we live not only for our own generation, but for our own. I'm very happy to have Mr. Adams and his parents here this afternoon. They have a big field. After all, it takes education to resolve the problems of the world. And it's been my desire at all times to so live and so work that I would bring to America a new ideal of what freedom and liberty means. But I pray that I may be willing to go wherever truth leads. Now, truth is often born in a manger, in a stable. Truth leads sometimes to very unpleasant places. And to be dedicated to follow it wherever it may lead, that is to be really dedicated. And then let the storms blow. Let the winds crash. You will still stand. A soldier doesn't work for pay. And he's not looking at the clock. He's not the watcher of time. His time clock shows only the amount of service he's been able to contribute. But this is what Madeline Messbridge says. She says it to me, and she says it to you. For life is a mirror of king and slave. 'Tis all that you are and do. Then give to the world the best you have, and the best will come down to you. And so it has come, in all these beautiful wishes that I've had today, in those letters, it has come in checks and dollars as an inspiration. It's true, I'm no longer young in years, but I think, as Sonny there said, I feel young in spirit, because I still got work to do. I thank you, and I bless you all for all your love and kindness to me. Thank you.
You shall know my son, shall said it out loud for people in enough places so that it's gotten around and the news is quite public, that there are no secrets in science. And there have been no secrets in science. And what one person knows in one place is known to some other people in other places by the same route and pretty much at the same time, or soon thereafter. Sometimes if one scientist does something, all he does is confirm an experiment that another scientist wants to do tomorrow. And very often we learn from each other things in casual meeting in science. We have many cases of discoveries done simultaneously in science in different parts of the world by different workers, unaware of the work of one another. Some of the most important discoveries were discovered almost simultaneously in other parts of the world by other people, and this maybe gives rise to occasional claims by various people that they've been the first to do this or to do that. Why am I bringing this out? Because the newspapers have been bringing it out very clearly to us lately, and with a twist, and it's a bitter twist, and for those who are interested in the Sobel case and who were interested in the Rosenberg case, because we're now learning that we were first instead of the Russians, and they were always making those claims about being first and this and that. We poo-pooed them, and now we're making the same claims about things, and they did it first, at least for people to see. The world has turned around, and Minnesota in Minneapolis in the Star last night, there was a little editorial that I think some of you saw. And what did it say? It said that guy from the Un-American Activities Committee, the one who in this morning's paper said he thought Greenglass and Gold ought to be set free because they're the only people he can get to cooperate. And therefore they obviously deserve their freedom. Besides, they're probably the only ones, since they've been out of the way for a while and put away, they're the only ones now that you can believe. The Budenzas and the others have all been discredited, and these fellows have been kept on ice for a while, and therefore maybe we ought to leave them out so that they can be the place where the new mythology will come from. Well, anyhow, in last night's paper in the Star, they said, don't believe these guys. These fellas there, their testimony is tainted when they say that these so-called spies, and that was what they said, these so-called spies turned over not only atomic secrets, but also the secret of Texnik, number one. After all, the biggest thing in the United States is Texas, so it would have probably been called Texnik number one. Anyhow, they said, don't believe this sort of thing. And you know, there's a little common sense coming into the picture. Another thing we learn in science is that when you attack a problem, if it doesn't lend itself to solution as a result of your attack the first time, you gather together more information and more data, and you go back at it. And this is exactly the stage we are in the Sobel case at the present time. We have attacked the problem, not once, not twice, but more than twice, and three or four times, and with new information and with new data, and we've gathered the material together, and we've done it scientifically, and we've tried to apply it as two people would in any scientific or sensible sense, to the problem, and we've knocked on the doors and said, here is common sense, here is truth. Shouldn't it be heard? And the answer has come back, not yet. Not quite in those words, but that was the answer. Not yet. Change the climate. Make it warmer. Show a little more common sense. Build it into the community. When the common sense is permeating the community, we'll listen. We're not promising what we'll do, but we'll listen. We're not even ready to listen yet. And so we have as a guest tonight a young woman who has really carried the story of the Sobel case, her own story, the story of her husband throughout the country and into Canada and down into Mexico, and who, trained in science, has been able to collect data that has helped attack the problem. And she would like to present to you some of her feelings and comments about the latest situation, the last happenings in the situation, and where we go from here. And this is probably the most important part. Where do we go from here? And so it is with real pleasure that I introduce to you Helen Sobel, the wife of Morton Sobel, a scientist temporarily unemployed away at Alcatraz, hopefully soon to join us again and to be a useful citizen in science and in America. Helen Sobel.
Today, some 4 years after the death of the Rosenbergs, and when my husband has finished 8 years in prison, that the events of history have taken the basic fundamental charge upon which this trial was engineered and undermined it completely. There no longer is any basis, even in public mind, for the charge upon which my husband was tried together with the Rosenbergs. The newspaper that Mike has mentioned here in this city had it no less than another little editorial which I found in the Milwaukee Journal yesterday. I didn't know about the newspaper here, but it's throughout the entire country that this thing is happening, that people are beginning to understand. I'd like to read you a few sentences from this Saturday editorial in the Milwaukee Journal. What did Russians learn is the question. Whatever the Russians managed to come up with, the Senate Internal Security Committee has a surefire way to prove that they didn't do it themselves. The committee runs down to the federal penitentiary at Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, and talks with David Greenglass, convicted atom spy. Greenglass plays his part by telling the probers that whatever the current Russian accomplishment is, it was made possible by his brother-in-law, Julius Rosenberg, executed as a spy. Currently, the committee says, Greenglass reveals that just after World War II, Rosenberg carried Earth satellite secrets stolen in this country to the Russians. The result, the committee implies, was the Sputniks. Maybe. But many Americans are beginning to wonder whether our rocket and missile men had anything that was ahead of the Russian Sputnikers. Granted, the Soviets stole. What did they learn? And this editorial here is the same thought that is in the minds of many people throughout the entire country. It is no accident, I believe, that our case continues to come again and again to the front pages of the newspapers. The Columbia Law Review some time ago called this case the outstanding political case of our generation. And this is very true. And it's for that reason, because it is a political case, because it was designed for political ends, that there continues to be reference to it. Every month, every 2 months, the newspapers are very aware of the political nature of this case. We have recently received from the Supreme Court of our country a denial of a very simple request. We went to the Supreme Court to ask them to hear the material that we had gathered together with a great deal of effort. We had no resources. We didn't have the power and the strength of our great government. We had only the power and the strength that came from our friends who had learned the facts in this case through reading the trial transcript, those who had come to meetings like this meeting here, who had listened and learned, and who knew because at this time in our country's history, there are so many things that are unhealthy, that are bad things. What we have in Morton is the picture of a person who has refused to betray his innocence, who has refused to betray his principles or his friends. It's true that he is in a prison in Alcatraz. And it's true that we're not very happy people, but we're proud people. At least we have the knowledge of knowing that we have retained our dignity, that we have managed to hold fast to those things that we know are the good and the beautiful things in life. And we have managed to hold fast to the anger that is so rightly ours, because we know that what happened to us could happen to anyone. And that's the reason that this problem becomes not only a problem for us in a family kind of a way, it's a problem for you too, because it's a problem of what is good and beautiful and worthwhile in life. And that's why we bring it to you, and with no hesitation. The Supreme Court has refused at this time to look at the facts that we have gathered. But this doesn't mean that we will stop in our efforts. We can't leave Morton, who has already spent those beautiful years of his life from the time that he was 33 until now he is 41 in prison and in Alcatraz, which is more than prison, which is a living death. We are going to continue our efforts. We are going to do it in a even more vigorous way than we have done it before. We have no alternative because we believe in truth and we believe in justice and we believe in human beings. And more than that, we know what love is and we know what it is for ourselves and for our fellow human beings. There are many things that we have thought of doing. There are many ways in which the fight must be carried to people. We have thought in terms of gathering together a committee of 1 million people throughout our entire country. And this is something that we believe can be accomplished within the near future. We know that the things that we took to the Supreme Court were good and strong legal points. They had a strong moral basis. There was only one thing that was lacking in the picture. We were not yet strong enough to prevail. When we have gathered together all of those people who, for whatever reason, believe that an injustice has been done here, then the courts in our land and those people in high places will listen to what we have to say, and they will act upon it. We believe that this is true. For this, we need your help, as we have never needed it before. When we had the opportunity of immediate action by the courts, then it was a question of working in a certain way. Now, we go not to the courts of law. We go primarily to the courts of the people. And to do this, you must go to people one by one. And you must talk to them as I talk to you. You must take them the facts in the case. You must explain to them that there is an innocent, a good, and a beautiful human being who is in Alcatraz. And because I'd like you to know better the kind of person that Morton is, I I'd like to read to you the letter that he wrote to me right after the decision on the last petition that we submitted to the Supreme Court. I think that you ought to know Morton, not only as a political figure, but as a real human being, to know what his thoughts and what his feelings are. Most dearest love, when I heard the news over the air, I still kept a faint hope alive that they had only turned down one of the two petitions. But there's nothing quite like this not knowing, the indecisiveness of one's emotions, the inability to concretize it all. I didn't sleep much that first night. My thoughts were much like those I had after we lost the initial appeal, that you shouldn't continue to waste what is left of your precious life, that you should leave me and begin to live like a normal human again. These were my thoughts on Tuesday night. I won't try to evaluate them, my love. The inescapable conclusion is that those who voted against certiorari have very strong feelings on the matter and will not even stop for a moment and ponder. Otherwise, why the rush and denial? I'll begin work on my version of the petition for rehearing on the assumption that we achieved no success in our quest for documentation. It was really so strange. I knew you couldn't mean it when you said that you weren't taking Mark with you when you came here. And yet there it was. Thus, while my intellect accepted the statement, my heart knew better. I was so relieved to find that it was a misunderstanding. Yes, I know how it is when answering. We sometimes run two unrelated thoughts together. It didn't really disturb me, deep down. It was so incomprehensible. As for the visiting dates, 3 in December and 1 in January. But you'll go down to Los Angeles, no? You'll have to figure the schedule accordingly. It is not critical. Just try to keep a few days between any two visits and keep 3 in December. If you'd go back to my letters of the period, you'll see that I too was impressed with Rosa Luxemburg's letters, with much self-identification. Yes, the difference between nobility and trash is often infinitesimal, but this is a specific case of a general truism that all polar qualities tend to merge at their extremes. Yes, when I read Ernst Toller, I recalled an experience that first Christmas you came to San Francisco, my love. And Moore here is referring to a book that we were reading together. We read books together. That is, he in Alcatraz and I wherever I am. And then we discuss these books that we read together. This book was a book called Great Prisoners. And it was the letters of people from Socrates through Dreyfus, through the great prisoners, down to the present day. I got my Scientific American late and proceeded to the problems that kept you up until 2 a.m. Number one has a solution like this. 2 cross cigarettes and 4 cigarettes in each of the included angles. And then he goes on to talk about the various solutions to this set of problems in the Scientific American. And then he says, I'll have a visit with Dreyfus on the morning. I was just told Benjamin Dreyfus is our San Francisco attorney by a strange coincidence. And then he goes on to say, but darling, all of your courses put end to end aren't enough for putting together a radio. I had raised with him the question of making a radio together with our young son, Mark. For radios, one needs a radio course, which you didn't take. Perhaps you want to get Mark a kit. I'll write you about such later. They're really not too educational. Very few kits are. Here I am writing as if nothing happened. And really, nothing much did happen, my love. Life continues much the same as before for me, only I can't dream a little like I did and feel that my dreams are more than dreams. What happened is too subtle to make itself manifest by any overt and rapid signs. It'll take its time. I like that picture of you outdoors, taken with flash, as well as the photos of Mark. But who painted the pictures in the photo of our living room? The plow, the bare trees, and the barren, rocky landscape. They're laying the blame regarding the missiles everywhere but the right place. It was a blunder to continue all the effort on airplane development when it was doomed to obsolescence in such a short time, and only begin serious work on rockets in 54. An analysis of why the stupendous error would be revealing of the limitations of human beings under certain conditions. But how could you compare working on the satellite program with my idea of working on a project for the blind? Absolutely no comparison to me. Mort has as his favorite project at this time some work that he has been doing in designing an instrument that would enable a blind person to read any book without having it translated into Braille or read into a recording. It's a project that has been his main interest outside of his work that he does in prison for 6 hours every day, which is refinishing old furniture. And in the 16 hours that he's locked in his cell at Alcatraz, he has been working on this project, together with working on the legal aspects of the case and attempting to carry on his studies. To go back to the letter, he continues, "Hello, darling. The world still moves even after we were denied the most elementary justice. Only a hearing we ask for. You should see on what flimsy grounds they grant hearings in other cases. Mere allegations without a bit of evidence or documentation. It's fantastic, the contrast. I put in to buy The Art of Love by Fromm, as well as Kafka's The Trial and The Ham Handbook. I've been holding off pending decision. I think you took it harder than I, no? But then you have your work, my love. We have so much to talk about with the new situation. Good night, be well and strong, for I love you." And at the bottom of Mort's letter, because he's only permitted to write 2 letters a week, on the last 2 lines, he wrote to Mark and he said, "Dearest son, I have your Halloween photo with your trick-or-treat bag. You look like a real circus clown. Also got your guitar picture. Is that how you usually play it? One foot on a chair to hold the guitar. How was Around the World in 80 Days? Later you'll read Jules Verne. Love, Dad, Morty." And when Mark read this letter from Mort, he said to me, because he knows a lot about this case, even if he's only 8 years old, Mark said to me, "How many people do you need to beat a judge?" And that's really the question here. How many people do we need to beat a judge? And it's really only one judge, because you must realize that in this case, the evidence was only heard by the trial judge. No other judge ever reviewed the testimony in this case. It is a fact that Mort is in Alcatraz facing this 30 years in prison when in the entire trial there was no witness, no matter how credible or incredible, there was no witness who ever said that Morton had ever given or received any kind of secret material. And this is an astounding and terrible fact to be faced with. No witness ever said that Morton had ever given or received any kind of secret material. there was only one witness who gave any kind of testimony against Mort. And this was a man who said on the witness stand that he was scared to death. And these are his words. He said that he had committed a perjury in another instance, and this made him liable to a prison sentence. He said that both he and his wife had gone to psychiatrists over a long period of time because of their own disturbance. And he said that he hoped for the best as a result of his testimony. This was the one witness who had anything to say about the whole charge of conspiracy to commit espionage as it applied to Morton Sobel. The other witnesses in the trial have been very thoroughly discredited since that time. Harry Gold has been shown to be a psychopathic liar, and I don't use the term lightly. You see how David Greenglass has been discredited through his willingness to support any lie that is given to him to mouth these days. Elizabeth Bentley has run the course of her usefulness as a blonde spy queen. And all of these people in the trial didn't even claim to know Morton, but it was their testimony that colored the trial and made it the political trial that it was. Out of this trial grew the concept that communists and communist sympathizers were more likely to commit espionage than others not so oriented. And this is a very basic, a very important decree of law that grew out of this case and has been used to suppress all kinds of activity on the part of people for peace, for freedom, for all of the good things in life. When Marx said, "How many people do we need to beat a judge?" it was hard for me to answer. Children's questions are often hard to answer. They say things so clearly and so truly. And I thought for a moment, and I said to him, "About 1 million people, I think, would do it. And I do believe that there, if there are 1 million people who will write and talk and think and work for Morton's freedom, if we can produce such a committee of 1 million people, it is possible to bring about Morton's freedom." And this is the thing that I believe we must work for in every possible way. It's true, it's a political case. It's even truer that it's a human case. And I believe that you know, as I do, that when Morton is free, it will be a good day for all of us. And for that reason, I ask that you do everything that you can to bring that day closer. There is no question but that history will decide the truth of this case. But we don't want to wait that long. We want to live at least part of our lives as other human beings do. And for this, we come to you and ask for your fullest thought and help with every fiber of your heart and soul if you believe that Morton is innocent, if you believe that he has made a contribution by the same.
Thank you. calling me? Who is it calling me? Who is it that said, Joan?
Don't you know me?
I recognize your Dominican rose, the white and the black.
My white rose, which my brothers in Paris and Rouen have so defiled with dirt that nothing can ever erase it. Not soda, not fuller's earth.
Brother Dominic, the grace of God will erase it. And the blood of this innocent girl will wash it clean.
Joan, my sister, so you do know me now.
Brother, my brother Dominic, we are sheep of the same wool. And I am but one of the flock who knows the voice of the shepherd.
Since my brothers and my sons have betrayed me, since all those who should have been the mighty voice of truth have become against God your accusers and your hangmen, Joan. Since in those twisted evil fingers the words have become an unintelligible scrawl, I myself, I, Dominic, have come down to you from heaven with this book.
Dominic, brother Dominic, all this time, how many pens at work have I seen around me?
All that has made a book.
That terrible voice that questioned me, and all those pens always around me, all those pens scratching on the parchment, all that has made a book. All that has made a book. And I cannot read.
To understand the book I bring you, you need know neither A nor B. This pack of words, strung together on earth by ignoramuses from Limoges, recorded in dark Latin of Foire, mangled in the jargon of Coutances, this pack of words has been translated for all time to come by the angels in heaven.
Then in the name of God, brother, read for me. And I will follow it over your shoulder.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost. Amen.
Hey, I'm in. Indefici a me, a te medio, popoli mei.
Thank you. What are you called? Pecus de pecore. Take your places right and left, and all receive your insignia of sheephead. And last of all, who will be the recorder?
Yeah.
dog is that, howling in the night?
It is not a dog. That is Iblis, howling in despair, all alone in the depths of hell.
Heretic. Sorceress. Apostate. Monster. I, Joan, am all that. The church, the priests, everyone in the world who is respected and capable and wise, with one voice they condemn. Tell me, Brother Dominic, what have I done? Read the book to me.
All of those great men who condemned you, those doctors and wise men, Crookback, Lady Bone, Thunderhead, Cutterbrain, believe firmly in the devil, but do not want to believe in God.
The devil? Why, he's real.
The angels, they are an absurdity. The devil you hated, he has helped you. The angels you prayed to, they have done nothing. So guilty either way, they condemned you on both counts. Such is the wisdom of the Sorbonne. Such are the illustrious doctors who wrinkle their noses at the Pope.
But I, a poor shepherd girl from Dorémy, how could I have come to this?
It is the game of cards that brought you here. The game of cards invented by a mad king.
What is it, this game of cards?
It is about to be explained to you.
Now every pack of cards has four kings, four queens, four ladies.
Not including numbers up to ten.
And when you're finished with the game, you'll find the kings have changed their places.
The one that was on south is now up north.
The one that was with east is now with west. They're changing.
Yes, the queens, they do not dream of changing places. They are always on the spot.
Now let their majesties appear.
Thank you.
games decide.
Oh, Have you indeed no shame to make merry together like heathens this holy Christmas Eve, while our Lord the King repairs to Rheims for consecration there by angels' hands? Come, my children, gather round me here, and we'll all sing together that lovely hymn in purest Latin that I have taught you. Auspiciem Alonge. You all know it. The one about the Jewish people awaiting the Messiah, as we await our Lord the King.
Oh.
did not deceive me. Catherine and Margaret did not deceive me.
such way.
Are you dead? Can't you hear the voices say, Joan, 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 daughter of God, get you gone. Ha! It is no longer sorceress that day. It is my own Christian name, the name that was given to me by my godparents. Joan, no longer heretic and apostate, and heaven knows what else, and all those ugly names.
Oh.
had all its limits. But suddenly a robin redbreast begins to sing. Suddenly a teasing little wind begins to blow, coming from who knows where. Suddenly a special little rain begins to fall warmly on you. Then you close your eyes and count 1, 2, 3, and everything is changed. There's just time to count 3, and all is changed. It's all white, all pink, all green. Indeed, to stop those lilacs from blooming, to stop those cherry trees from blooming and filling the whole world with cherry blossoms. As my father said, you'd have to get up pretty early in the morning. But that is just when Catherine and Margaret begin to speak to me. When Joan mounts her battle charger in the month of May, you'd have to be very cunning indeed to stop all France from going with her. Listen, do you hear those chains on every side bursting and breaking? Why, these chains on my hands make me laugh. I won't always have them. Oh, no. Doesn't everyone know by now what Joan can do with a sword? And don't you understand that now this sword Saint Michael gave me, this sword, this shining sword, it's not a sword of hate. Open.